En mörk oändlig Ingmar.
Welcome to Views from the World Tree. On this week's show, we take a closer look at how to prepare for a disaster in a sustainable way. And now, on with the show.
Yes, I see. Good news, everyone.
Yay, prepping. My favorite topic. For news, I don't really have anything. I'll just give a quick update on my 100 books for the year, the goal that I set. I have read 15. So that puts me, I think, one book behind if I'm breaking it up by week. But I'm also kind of front loading with a few really long ones.
So, oh, man.
15 books.
When you started the 100 book challenge, I'm like, oh, I could do that. I want to do 100 books. I have read 8. I am way behind.
It's been tough. I've powered through the first 2 books of the Stormlight Archive, which are really long books. I'm working on the third. So definitely have to read multiple books at a time. Otherwise, I'm not going to make it.
Yeah. Well, I mean... I just finished the climate book from Greta, which I actually kind of enjoyed personally. That was the last book that I read from my challenge. But she curated it. She didn't just write it. She got scientists from all different disciplines to basically write little chapters. And I think it was really well done.
Cool.
Yeah. So that's actually why I came up with the idea of sustainable prepping. It's hard to read a book about a climate activist or by a climate activist and just go, oh yeah, plastic bottles and stuff.
Fair enough.
So, for me, as far as news goes, I just checked out Girl with the Dragon Tattoo by Stieg Larsson. And I also checked out another CJ Box book from the Joe Pickett series. So I'm plugging away. I'm gonna catch up to you on the reading here soon.
I look forward to it. I'm sure you'll make it.
We'll see. I might have to count all the little 4-page books that I'm reading my daughter at bedtime.
There you go. You'll make up lost ground pretty quick that way.
Anyway, what's our mindfulness moment this week?
So for this week, it ties in pretty great with the topic at hand. This is by Abraham Lincoln. The quote is, "Give me 6 hours to cut down a tree, and I will spend the first 4 sharpening the axe." So I think I've probably heard this one multiple times throughout my life, and I think it pretty much speaks for itself, right? The most important thing to do is to be prepared before you start on a task. So
yeah, I mean, if crap hits the fan, you don't have time to be preparing in the thick of it, right? So
yeah, definitely. When the disaster strikes, it's already too late. So.
Mm-hmm. All righty. Well, super short intro this week. But what's our main topic? Our main topic is sustainable prepping. So, Adam, this is more your bread and butter, the prepping side. So just before we jump in, what are your thoughts? Like, do you feel like prepping should be sustainable, or is it just fine the way it is?
I have to admit, when you proposed the topic, I was a little bit baffled. just because they're not two schools of thought that generally go together. I don't know that there's necessarily any reason that they don't. They just don't typically, you know, don't typically attract the same crowd, I guess. But I guess to answer your actual question, I think you can prep sustainably. I don't know. I mean, everybody has to judge for themselves, right? Are you going to do one at the expense of the other? Are you going to go completely off the rails doomsday prepper and not take into account your environmental impact? Or are you going to go the extreme other way and, you know, be super eco-friendly, but have your gear and your food storage only last a month because, you know, it's not in durable containers, or, you know, you put some food away, but you didn't like preserve it in any way. So you kind of have to find where on the spectrum you're comfortable with, I guess.
I think like everything, there's got to be a little bit of a balance, right? I mean, too far one way or the other, you're not going to get done what your goal is. Well, I guess if you go full on doomsday prepper, you might accomplish your goal, but then your day-to-day life is kind of lacking too, in my opinion.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's all very hypothetical too. Like, depending on what you're preparing for, what kind of disaster it is that comes along, if anything ever does, you know, if the disaster that ends up knocking everything out is like a nuclear war, chances are it doesn't matter how environmentally sustainable your preps are, it's going to be a drop in the bucket compared to the impact of, you know, whatever nuclear fallout there is. But I mean, on the other hand, if, you know, if the thing that ends up taking out society is just an environmental collapse, which it's kind of looking that might be the way things are going. Yeah, it's, you know, it's maybe worth taking a look at, because I mean, you don't want to be prepared to survive and then not have a planet to survive on. So
I think those are great points. I guess it all depends on what you are trying to prepare for. So my thoughts when I originally proposed this topic was kind of twofold. One was to try to get you out of your comfort zone. And it sounds like I may have succeeded to an extent.
Like my comfort zone.
We all do. Well, not necessarily yours, but we all like our personal comfort zones.
Fair.
But the other one was to kind of look at kind of prepping as a whole. A lot of the things that are geared towards preppers are like vacuum sealed plastic bags, the 200 pack of batteries that are probably going to expire before a nuclear disaster ever happens. Like, there's a lot of waste in the prepping community. And so I just kind of wanted to look at it as, can the prepping community do better before it's too late? Like, are we creating our own disaster by prepping the way that we are, type of thing? And so those were the two reasons I kind of looked at this one.
Yeah, I think it's a great thing to look at. Yeah, it definitely stretched me a little bit. I had to do some research on this one. I kind of came up with three different, I don't know, sections, three different main points, I guess, as far as sustainable prepping. And the first one is pretty much what you were just talking about, the gear, you know, what type of eco-friendly gear is there? What kind of options are there? What can we do to try and reduce like our plastic waste and, you know, stockpiling batteries and stuff? The second point that I thought would be interesting to talk about is sustainable food storage. Just because my wife and I have been doing a lot of our own food storage recently with this past year with the garden and all the ridiculous amount of vegetables and stuff that we got. I'm finding that we're doing a lot less of purchasing food storage and a lot more of like our own preserving and canning. So I thought that would be kind of cool to go into. And then the last point I wanted to touch on is my favorite part of eco-consciousness, which is kind of the do-it-yourself and like upcycling or, you know, reusing things that we already have. So that's kind of the three main things that I thought we could talk about today.
Yeah, that's perfect. Kind of reminds me of last season when we talked about the whole genre of solar punk. This kind of feels like a total solar punk topic.
Yeah, definitely.
But so you had mentioned that the first topic or subtopic of this was eco-friendly gear. So when I think of that, I think of back in the day, I used to listen to a lot of Coast to Coast, and their audience was definitely survivalists. And they always talked about the different radios and type of things that you can do, use for those. And so my first thought is like the hand crank or the squeeze powered solar radio, two-way radios that back in the early 2000s, all the survivalist like advertising was towards. So I think of the solar paneled crank radios as like the first thing that I think of when it comes to eco-friendly gear.
Yeah, I actually have one of those sitting in my safe right now. It's got a little solar panel on top. And then if that doesn't work, it's got a little hand crank so you can power it. And it's just a, I don't remember if it's, I think it's AM, FM and weather radio. So it's just a receiver, obviously, but yeah, it's a pretty cool little gadget.
I think those things are awesome. And, you know, even not sustainable, having alternate ways to charge your stuff is super important. So the solar panels are super cool.
Yeah, agreed. The other thing, so you kind of already mentioned this, is water bottles. And I'm a little bit guilty on this one. It's just so easy when you go to the store to just grab that case of the cheap plastic water bottles. Like it's all packaged up. It's in individual portions. You know, you just grab the case, stick it in the garage. And I like to get those because when we go camping, we use those instead of ice. Because we have a case in our freezer all the time. So when it's time to go camping, we can use that instead of the ice. But it really does create a lot of plastic waste, and the PET plastic that's in those water bottles is recyclable, but I mean, you have the whole issue with microplastics and all kinds of problems. And in my area, plastic recycling is not readily available. You can't curbside recycle most plastics. And so reusable water bottles is a great thing to have. It's a great thing to invest in. They're more durable. The ones that I like are the Stanley branded steel vacuum insulated. They have all different like shapes and sizes and stuff. And we have a bunch of those. It works better than the plastic bottles, keep stuff cold or hot for a long time. So they're a little bit spendy, but it's, I mean, it's something that you buy once and it lasts you pretty much forever.
Right. Also, I don't know much about the shelf life of water, of tap water, I guess. I know water in its purest form is shelf stable indefinitely. But as far as tap water, I assume that it would last longer without plastic, like the way that the chemicals from single-use plastics are known to leach into water. There's a reason why you've got to be careful with the storage and throw them out. Water doesn't really expire, but the bottle that it's in expires. So I'd assume the steel is actually healthier for you for long-term storage too.
Probably. My like long-term water storage is a couple of the 55-gallon, I don't remember what exactly, they're like HDPE or some type of polymer, I don't know, fancy plastic, but it's designed for storing water for a long time. So it's, again, it's still plastic, but it's
more shelf stable,
purpose designed for that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's one container that holds 55 gallons. So it's not like a bunch of little ones that I'm going to be throwing away, you know, multiples a day. It's kind of a lifetime thing that'll be reused for as long as I need water. As far as the shelf life of water in the little plastic bottles, it's really not very long. Maybe 6 months to a year, unless you do something to treat it, and which is what I've done in my big barrels. But yeah, bottled water doesn't last very long.
Not at all.
That super thin walled clear plastic doesn't really do much. Like you said, it leaches stuff back and forth. Sunlight is the other thing. It lets in a lot of light, which can lead to bacterial growth.
Yeah. And a lot of the plastic that they're finding with current research, that a lot of the single-use plastic right now actually has endocrine type of blockers. So it can mess with your immune function, your hormone levels. It can wreak havoc on your body if you consume outside of its expiration date. So,
plus it's just way more expensive than tap water, but
I'm in water. I took an environmental sampling class a couple years ago, or last year I should say, and we did water tests, and actually on a peer-reviewed journal we found out that most of the single-use plastic water that you get is just tap water. They fill it from the same source that you get turning on your faucet here in America, and then they sell it to you for almost 300 times what you pay per liter of tap water.
Oh yeah. I mean, that's the Nestle Corporation's business model right there. Buy up all the clean water and package it and sell it back at a 300% markup. So
yeah,
but that's a huge tangent for another day.
Anyway, let's get back to prepping. So solar powered chargers, you had these, you had this on the list.
Yeah. So I've got the solar powered radio one. I have, one that we take camping. I think it's the Goal Zero brand. It's basically a car battery with some fancy like ports and circuitry. And then there's some solar panels that plug into it. And it's, I mean, we've had it for almost 10 years. So.
Nice. I actually haven't used any of these yet. Is there any drawbacks or at all? Is it hard to use in the forest or?
It's heavy. But again, that's the one that I have is a lead acid deep cycle battery. It's literally a car battery. With a case and a handle, and like some converter circuits so that you can plug in AC power plugs for your gear. The technology has actually come quite a ways since I got mine, so I wouldn't necessarily recommend the one that I have just because there's a lot of newer ones out there. It's pretty common to find lithium ion. They call them solar generators, even though they don't actually generate anything. You have to obviously have a solar panel to go with it. But yeah, there's a lot of them out there. They're getting a lot cheaper than they used to be. I know Jackery is one that's thrown around quite a bit. But there's a few other brands that I see on my, you know, my YouTube videos and stuff that people recommend.
All right. So one of the things that always gets me in an emergency is you see a lot of people that go and buy cases on cases on cases of toilet paper. And toilet paper is super important. It's something that you not only use to clean yourself, it can be used as kindling for a fire. It can be used in many ways. But one of the things, sustainable wise, that I look at is kind of looking for things that are compostable, biodegradable, don't have a lot of chemicals attached to them, keep you clean and keep the environment kind of moving around. Another option, unfortunately, most of them are made of plastic, is you can buy like little bidet bottles and you can use those to clean yourself up after you make boom boom in the forest.
Yeah, I forgot about those. We recently switched to a bidet in our bathroom in our house. We just got one of the like $40 add-on ones that bolts onto your commode, onto your toilet. And it's been awesome. It's drastically reduced how much toilet paper we use, which, I mean, environmental impact aside, it's just a lot cheaper not to have to buy toilet paper all the time.
It's cheaper. We don't have one here. We were talking about it while my wife was pregnant because it's, I guess I've never been pregnant, but I guess it's hard to take care of yourself when you're growing another human being, but that's besides the point. She'll probably, if she ever listens to this, she'll probably be like, "You said what?" Anyway, I actually find myself to feel a little bit cleaner. I feel like it cleans a little bit better than your toilet paper.
Definitely
too. The portable bidet or compostable toilet paper, I think, is something that you can add to your prepping situation that is a little bit more sustainable. What do you have for us next?
So another thing that is important to have in your preps is a source of light. So traditionally this was like propane lanterns or the old Maglite flashlights that took the big D cell batteries. And I still have a couple of those flashlights. I still have two propane lanterns, but LED lanterns are kind of the new fancy thing. They are supposedly more eco-friendly. I'm not sure how much I believe that just because of all the plastic and most of them have a battery in there. But the propane lanterns, I mean, they do, you know, you're burning propane, which is not great. You're not really capturing any of the emissions through some type of a emission system. So there is an impact there. It may be a trade-off, honestly. I don't know for sure on that. But I do know that LED lanterns are probably safer because, again, you're not burning something flammable. Propane is very flammable. It's an explosive gas. The LED lanterns usually don't have glass. Propane lanterns do. Glass breaks, cuts people. Propane lantern, if you tip it over, you're probably either going to get cut or you're going to catch something on fire. An LED lantern, if it tips over, nothing's going to happen. It's just a, you know, a plastic flashlight. You pick it back up, and a lot of them, I do have one that actually has a solar panel built in. So during the day, you just sit it out on the table, it recharges, and then at night you turn it on and you have light. Those are kind of cool.
That's super cool. Yeah. I remember the old propane lanterns when I was growing up. My dad always had one. He'd bring it with us camping and stuff. And it always scared me. Just the hiss, the angry hiss from it, you know? So I do like that they're adding more, not just more sources of light or more things that you can use that are environmentally friendly, but also something that like your kids or anybody can use. Those old propane, between the pumping and the lighting and the everything, requires a certain amount of dexterity that you may or may not be able to do when you're shivering cold.
Oh yeah, for sure.
So super cool. Food storage containers. You can do a lot with tin cans. You can do a lot with old coffee cans, things like that. But the most important thing is to look at long-lasting storage containers. So you're going to look at your stainless steels or glass. Glass is completely inert. A lot of people don't realize this. Glass is not considered a polluter because it's made basically out of sand. When we're all gone, the glass will break and it'll turn into sand once more. It's completely inert. It doesn't react with the environment. And so glass is another really good thing. So actually, growing up, we used to have our rice, our dried beans, our flours and stuff stored in giant gallon glass masonry, like milk jugs.
Mm-hmm.
Was kind of the thing. So,
yeah, and glass is a lot more durable than people would think, especially glass that's purpose designed for food storage. So a lot of your like quart sized mason jars, we have tons of those now from all the canning that we did last fall. And they've been like bumped and knocked over and dropped, and they're surprisingly resilient. A lot of that comes with, you know, buying good quality jars. We tend to stay to one of the two major brands here in the U.S. and stay away from some of the cheap stuff. But yeah, glass is awesome.
Yeah, for sure.
So as far as the other gear stuff, we already talked about hand crank radios. The only other thing I came up with when I was reading was camp stoves. This kind of just is continuing off of the whole lantern topic. I don't know what the environmental impact of a propane stove versus like a little wooden stove, not a wooden stove, but a stove that burns wood. Right. But that is a topic that came up on one of the sites that I was reading on. Personally, I don't know how much sense this one makes, other than it's going to be a lot easier to find wood in the doomsday than it will be to find propane. So, but I've always been a really big fan of the Coleman stove, right? That can use either propane or kerosene or whatever. But if that, you know, if it breaks or you run out of fuel, or potentially if it's less eco-friendly, they do make cooking stoves, backpacking stoves that you literally just put little like sticks and twigs in, and you use that to cook. They're not as big. You can't do like, you know, multiple things at a time. But they do exist.
For this one, I may get some flack from like true environmentalists. Just go with the white gas stove or the backpacking stove. The amount of heat produced compared to the amount of fuel required, you're going to get more bang for your buck using gas. As far as the other ones, like a solar oven or like a wood burning stove, they're great if you don't have access to fuel. But I mean, in all honesty, I don't think that they're worth using instead of. If you're staunch, like true believer, we must get away from fossil fuels, there's nothing wrong with them, but they're just not going to do the job, in my opinion.
And I mean, if you really want to ditch your Coleman stove, I would say probably, you know, get a Dutch oven and just stick it in the campfire. I've done that countless times. Works fantastic. And that way you're combining items, right? You're combining your stove with a dish of some kind. So that's another often overlooked thing about prepping sustainably. If you can combine devices, combine gear into just one thing, then that's one more thing you don't have to buy, one more thing you don't have to throw into a landfill. So,
well, let's see. So according to a website that I just found, propane's going to produce roughly 135 pounds of carbon dioxide per million BTUs. So that sounds like a lot, but it's clean. The downside with wood is you're going to get a lot of what they call black carbon or soot, which is going to increase like the particulate matter. And so actually in the short term, propane is actually a cleaner burning fuel than wood. Just wanted to throw that out there.
Yeah, makes sense.
So, yeah.
Okay. So that covers the gear. Moving on then, try and hit these last two. Try and keep it under an hour. So food storage. What are some ways that we can do food storage in a sustainable way?
As far as sustainability, the most sustainable way to store your food is to actually store things that you have grown yourself, so you don't have that carbon footprint of the farm to the carbon footprint of the processing center to the carbon footprint of the shipping industry. All of that adds up hard in a survival situation. So you want to do things that are long shelf lives with the least amount of influence towards them, for lack of a better word. Sorry, it's late. I'm tired. So you're going to be looking at dehydrated foods. You're going to be looking at your rices. You're going to be looking at your flours. You're going to be looking at your beans. You're going to be looking at anything that's dehydrated. They tend to be less pumped full of preservatives. They tend to have less packaging, and they tend to be more shelf stable for longer. On top of that, a lot of them you can buy in bulk, which is another thing that will both save you money and help reduce your impact. So dehydrated foods and buying in bulk.
Yeah, and dried beans last literally forever. As long as a critter doesn't get into them, they do not go bad.
Mm-hmm.
So I already touched on canning. Just really quickly, For those who may be new to this, canning is basically you seal your food in airtight jars. So it can be stored for long periods without needing to be refrigerated. Like you mentioned, you can can your own fruits and vegetables so that you're not, you don't have all the added stuff from buying store-bought stuff. And you can just about everything. You can can your dried goods. You can can rice. You can can beans. You can can fruit. You can can tomatoes. You can even can meat if you do it right. Make sure you research that. You have to make sure you get it to the right temperature and the right pressure for that to be safe. You can can eggs. You can make pretty much anything shelf stable by canning. So really cool technology that's actually really old.
It's been around forever. I used to love going to the county fair and seeing all the pickled and canning competitions. These old grandmas that had old school, old world recipes that would were so proud of their pickled beets or pickled eggs. I still can't eat pickled eggs anymore just because of the, some experiences, but yeah.
Yeah. I love canning. If you want, you can go back and listen to our episodes last fall when I talked about it, but my wife and I have been eating, we've had a jar of peaches and a jar of pears every week since last fall. Because when we canned them all, we just wrote the date on the lid and spaced them out a week. And we've had, you know, nearly fresh fruit all winter. And we have enough that it'll last us until next fall.
Another cool thing about canning fruit, for you alcoholic drinkers in the audience, they make great simple syrups for your mixed drinks.
Yeah, definitely.
Just saying. But I wouldn't know that. Besides canning, freeze drying is another thing. This is basically the ability or the process of removing all moisture from whatever you're trying to hold. You freeze it and then you rapidly remove the ice through vacuum. So freeze-dried fruits are super lightweight. They take up not a lot of space and can last till the end of my lifetime if I were to do it today, if stored correctly. Most often they're also packaged in recyclable containers or biodegradable, depending on where you get them. Most of the things, like a Trader Joe's situation, Sprouts come in biodegradable or paper stock.
Yeah. So this last one isn't necessarily food storage, but I didn't really have a better place to put it. so that's composting. And I felt like this was worth mentioning just because if you are storing food, if you are trying to be more environmentally conscious about your food chain and where it comes from and how you use it, how long it lasts, then it's definitely worth looking at composting. It's a great way to reduce your environmental impact. You produce less trash. Your trash doesn't go in the landfill. You don't necessarily produce less, but basically you compost your food scraps to create really nutrient-rich soil for gardening. It's super easy to do, and you can do it anywhere. It doesn't matter if you live in a studio apartment or out in the country with acres and acres of space. You can compost your food waste, and it kind of gives back to that cycle of, you know, producing food, consuming food, and then goes back in through composting. So.
Excuse me. Another cool thing about composting, it's regenerative. The problem with modern day agriculture, the world over, is all the tilling and chemical fertilizers and stuff is actually depleting the soil level. It's all running away. Composting adds an organic back into your soil, which gives you twofold. It gives you something for water to adhere to, which makes it more readily available for your plants. It also makes it so less likely for a heavy rain to take that topsoil away. And so composting is really good, even not in a prepping situation, if you're into gardening at all. Just for the regenerative properties of it. You don't even have to grow your food using it. You can also throw it into your onto your lawn, sprinkle it over your lawn, sprinkle it into your garden beds, or just take it to a neighborhood park and throw it out there. But Americans throw away up to 80% of the food that they buy, which goes to landfills and creates massive problems because landfills don't turn over the trash. And so you create kind of a methane buildup. Whereas composting, because you're circulating it and turning it over, it's actually healthier for the environment and healthier for you. So I just wanted to throw all that out there.
Yeah, it's a great point. Even if you don't care about growing anything, it's worth it. Just find somebody else that does care about growing stuff and give it to them or sell it to them or whatever, depending on how altruistic you're feeling. But
before we jump into the last one, can I do an honorable mention as far as sustainable prepping?
Go for it.
Know the area that you want to survive in or that you are surviving in. Have an idea of what plants are edible, what plants to avoid. Have an idea of the animal life that's in the area. Have an idea of where to find water, and have an idea of how to get out of the city if you can. Part of being sustainable is kind of knowing your environment. And I feel like having an idea of what you can and can't eat in a foraging situation is both sustainable and actually can help supplement your food storage.
Yeah, that's a great point. Glad you brought it up.
I feel like we could do a whole episode just on foraging in a prep situation, but I just wanted to throw that out there as an honorable mention.
Oh, yeah. It's maybe worth looking into. I've got multiple books that just talk about that. So,
I've got one that I bought at an army surplus store, which basically is a field guide for food sources in urban environments.
Nice.
So
cool. So DIY and upcycling. DIY is do it yourself. Upcycling is taking something that's, you know, been used up and finding something else to use it for. The best thing that you can do as far as like reducing the amount of trash and stuff that you produce is not to buy things like plastic containers and all of this other crap. The next best thing you can do is to repurpose those old items. So we talked about water collection a little bit ago. If you don't want to buy like rain barrels or the big 55-gallon water barrels like I have, you can repurpose any food grade plastic container to store water, as long as it's not been used to store, you know, unsafe chemicals or oil or things like that. If it's food grade, if it's clean, you can store water in it. Just, you know, you can purify it. It'll last for, you know, a couple of years at least. You can also, if you have other large containers, you can use those to collect rainwater. Either for use during emergencies for hygiene type stuff or to like water gardens and things like that. But lots and lots of opportunities for water collection, using old old items.
Perfect. In regards to that, I personally would recommend something that can be covered, because where I live, mosquitoes, if they're standing water, will turn it into a spawning pool. And not only will you be eating or drinking from potentially unsafe water, it also creates kind of a health hazard with waterborne viruses through mosquito bites and whatnot. So just keep that in mind.
Yeah, definitely. I probably should have mentioned that. Something with a lid is great.
Yeah.
A good example is, so my wife and I use CPAP machines, and so we have to buy distilled water. There's not really a way reliably or cheaply to make our own distilled water. So we have all of these gallon water jugs. And rather than throwing those out, we refill them with tap water, drop a little water purification tablet in there, and add that to our water storage. So if you have old water jugs like that, there's absolutely no reason not to just refill them and store them.
Perfect. So clothing. For those of you who are not very savvy with a sewing needle, it might be time to take a class or two from the little old woman in your community who still hand makes everything. Or I'm sure they have classes at the Y or community centers or things like that. For those of you that are not in America, the Y is short for the YMCA. It's basically a community center that offers community outreach classes. But sewing is a great way to extend the life of your clothes. You can also, by doing it, you can alter things. You can figure out how to take out seams, extend. Basically, anything a tailor can do, you can do just not as well with a needle and thread. And once your clothes kind of wear out, you can use them for rags, towels, a bunch of stuff. I remember my dad used to have an old potato sack full of mismatched socks that he used to whenever he was out fixing the car. Those were his rags.
Nice.
So, yeah.
So the next one on the list is shelter. So building your own shelter, you can use repurposed materials like pallets, shipping containers. It's a great way to reduce waste and create, eco-conscious living spaces during an emergency. There are, entire communities and stuff built from repurposed building materials. So in an emergency situation, there's nothing wrong with that. And it's a great way to reuse stuff.
There you go. First aid. So you can buy a brand new first aid kit full of everything, or you can source a lot of stuff by using old clothes that are cleaned. You can create bandages. You can use that needle and thread that we talked about with clothing repair and have a suture kit in your first aid kit. You can repurpose old backpacks, old camera bags, old anything to store it. And kind of going with our food storage, having a knowledge of herbs and plants that grow in your area or that you put into your garden itself that have healing properties. If you live in a desert environment, aloe vera is amazing. Or just knowing how to find and look, or how to identify a willow tree. Willow bark is actually full of the same chemical compound that makes aspirin. So just understanding workarounds so you don't have to spend a bunch of money on man-made pills in a plastic bag that will potentially lose their ability to be helpful in 5 years' time is helpful.
Yeah, great points. So another thing that you can do with reused materials or upcycled materials is water filtration. Depending on what type of emergency or disaster you find yourself in, fresh water from municipal sources is typically one of the first things that we lose. I mean, there's a big news story here in the U.S. recently about a train that derailed, and there's been huge community without fresh water for quite a while. And so you can make your own water filters. We talked about using old water jugs. Containers like that are the perfect medium for filling with sand, charcoal, gravel, and you can make your own water filters so that you can have clean, drinkable water during an emergency. So.
Mm-hmm. And then the last thing that we kind of thought of in regards to upcycling, recycling, is fire starters. So you can, lighters, matches, all that stuff is great, but you can't really guarantee that it will take. So things around your house work great to help with kindling or help create a fire starter. For example, dryer lint from your dryer is amazing. Wax from a depleted candle can help create a sustainable burn. Some of those old clothes, the compostable toilet paper, all that stuff can be used to help build a fire in an emergency situation, as well as reduce some of the junk that we just throw out daily. So fire starters is a great thing. Also, everything around you can be repurposed, in my experience. So think outside the box. Sorry. That was very anticlimactic. Think outside the box, people. I don't know. Do you have anything else to add, Adam?
I mean, just bringing it back full circle, I guess, like we talked about at the beginning. You know, prepping is a fun hobby to have, and collecting gear is a lot of fun. It's something that I like to do. There's a lot of really cool stuff out there. But you don't always need the newest survival gadget, you know, or the newest, like, most awesome backpack with all these cool features. You can use what you have. You can go about it in a more sustainable, a more conscious, more mindful way, and still survive just as well as the guy with all the fancy gear.
Well said. And with that, I think that's our episode. So what are we doing next week?
So next week, taking it back to a bit of a conspiracy thing. Take a looking at the lunar landing, whether or not it was faked.
I'm excited for this one. We might have to do a little bit of digging and find that soundstage.
Sounds good. Well, we'll see you guys next week.
See you then.